Chapter 71. The backhoe the Special Operations Forces had transported from Virginia was huge. Wide treads moved its massive bulk up the slope to a site marked by one of Lily's small marker flags. After 10 minutes of instruction and a little practice, Pitt memorized the lever functions and began operating the steel behemoth on his own. He raised the 2.5-meter-wide bucket and then brought it down like a giant claw, striking the hard ground with a loud clang. In less than an hour, a trench 6 meters deep and 20 meters in length had been carved on the rear slope of the hill. That was as far as the excavation progressed when a Chevrolet four-wheel drive Blazer staff car came barreling through the underbrush with a truckload of armed soldiers trailing in its dust. The wheels had not yet stopped turning when a captain with a ramrod straight back and the eyes of a man driven by an inspired dedication to Army discipline and standard operating procedure jumped to the ground. "This is a restricted area," he snapped smartly. "I warned you people personally 2 days ago not to re-enter. You must remove your equipment and leave immediately." Pitt indifferently climbed down from his seat and stared into the bottom of the trench as though the officer didn't exist. The captain's face went red and he barked to his sergeant, "Sergeant O'Hara, prepare the men to escort these civilians from the area." Pitt slowly turned and smiled pleasantly. "Sorry, but we're staying put." The captain smiled back, but his smile was scorching. "You have 3 minutes to leave and take that backhoe with you. Do you care to see papers authorizing us to be here? Unless they were signed by General Chandler, you're chewing air. They come from a higher command than your general." "You have 3 minutes," the captain said flatly. "Then I will have you forcibly removed." Lily, Giordino, and the admiral, who were sitting out of the sun in Trinity's borrowed Jeep Wagoneer, walked over to take in the show. Lily was wearing only a halter and tight shorts. She saucily paraded up and down in front of the line of soldiers. Women who have never worked the streets as hookers cannot walk with a seductive swing and sway that appears like a natural phenomenon. They tend to exaggerate to the point of slapstick. Lily was no exception, but the men could not have cared less. They ate up the performance. Pitt began to tense with anger. He hated pompous sapheads. "You have only 12 men, Captain, 12 engineers with less than 100 hours of combat training. I have 40 men backing me, any 2 of whom could kill your entire force in less than 30 seconds with their bare hands. I'm not asking, I'm telling you to back off." The captain made a casual 300-degree turn, but all he saw besides Pitt were Lily strutting in front of the troops, Admiral Sandecker, who was unconcernedly puffing a large cigar, and a man he hadn't seen before wearing an arm sling. They were both leaning against the jeep as if they were half asleep. He glanced quickly at Pitt, but Pitt's eyes gave no hint of emotion. He made a forward motion with his hand. "Sergeant, move these people the hell out of here." Before his men had taken 2 steps, Colonel Hollis seemed to appear as if by magic. The simulated colors of his camouflaged battle dress and grease-hued hands and face were incredibly faithful to the surrounding foliage. Standing less than 5 meters away, he blended into the underbrush nearly to the point of invisibility. "Do we have a problem?" Hollis asked the captain, about as charitably as a sidewinder eyeing a gopher. The captain's mouth dropped open and his men froze in position. He took a few steps closer and gawked at Hollis more carefully, seeing no obvious sign of rank. "Who are you?" he blurted. "What is your outfit?"
"Colonel Morton Hollis, Special Operations Forces."
"Captain Lewis Cranston, sir, 486th Engineering Battalion." Salutes were exchanged. Hollis nodded toward the line of engineers, their automatic weapons at the ready.
"I think you can give the order for your men to stand at rest."
Cranston was uncertain what to make of an unfamiliar colonel who appeared out of nowhere.
"May I ask, Colonel, what a Special Forces officer is doing here?"
"Seeing that these people are allowed to conduct an archaeological survey without interference."
"I must remind you, sir, civilians are not permitted in a restricted military zone."
"Suppose I told you they have the authority to be here."
"Sorry, Colonel, I am under direct orders from General Chandler. He was very explicit. No one, and that includes yourself, sir, who is not a member of the battalion, is to be allowed to enter."
"Am I to understand you intend to throw me out as well?"
"If you can't present signed orders from General Chandler for your presence," Cranston said nervously, "I will obey my instructions."
"Your hard-nosed position won't win you any medals, Captain. I think you'd better reconsider."
Cranston knew damned well he was being toyed with, and he didn't like it.
"Please, no trouble, Colonel." You load up your men and return to your base and don't even think of looking back. Pitt was enjoying the encounter, but he reluctantly turned away and climbed down into the trench. He began probing the dirt on the bottom. Giordino and Sandecker idly strolled over to the edge and watched him. Cranston hesitated. He was outranked, but his orders were clear. He decided his stance was firm. General Chandler would back him if there was an investigation. But before he could order his men to clear the area, Hollis took a whistle from a pocket and blew two shrill blasts. Like ghosts rising from the graves of a horror movie, 40 forms that looked more like bushes and undergrowth than men suddenly materialized and formed a loose circle around Captain Cranston and his men. Hollis's eyes turned venomous. "Bang, you're dead." "You called, boss?" said a bush that sounded like Dillinger. Cranston's cockiness collapsed. "I must report this to General Chandler," he stammered. "You do that," said Hollis coldly. "You can also inform him that my orders come from General Clayton Metcalf of the Joint Chiefs. This can be verified through communications to the Pentagon. These people and my team are not here to interfere with your excavation on Gongora Hill or get in the way of the General's operations along the river. Our job is to find and preserve Roman surface artifacts before they're lost or stolen. Do you read, Captain?"
"I understand, sir," replied Cranston, gazing around uneasily at the purposeful-looking men, whose facial expressions appeared frightful under the camouflage makeup.
"Found another one," Pitt shouted, unseen below ground. Sandecker excitedly waved everyone to the trench. "He's got something!" The confrontation was momentarily forgotten as the engineers and SOF men clustered around the rim of the trench. Pitt was on his hands and knees, brushing away loose dirt from a long metallic object. In a few minutes, he pulled it free and very carefully passed it up to Lily. The flippancy was gone now as she examined the ancient relic.
4th-century sword with definite Roman characteristics," she announced, "neatly intact with little corrosion."
"May I?" asked Hollis. She held it out to him, and he gently clasped his hand around the hilt and lifted the blade above his head. "Just think," he murmured reverently, "the last man to hold this was a Roman legionary." Then he graciously passed it to Cranston. "How'd you like to fight a battle with this instead of an automatic firearm?"
"I'd prefer a bullet any day," Cranston said thoughtfully, "to being hacked to shreds."
As soon as the engineers left on the short drive back to their encampment, Pitt turned to Hollis. "My compliments on your camouflage. I only detected 3 out of your whole team."
"It was eerie," said Lily, "knowing you were all around us, but not visible."
Hollis looked genuinely embarrassed. "We're more used to concealment in jungle or forest. This was a good field exercise for semi-arid terrain." "An excellent job," added Sandecker, pumping Hollis's hand. "Let's hope General Chandler buys the good captain's report," said Giordino.
"If he bothers to hear it," Pitt replied. "The general's most urgent business is to stop 500,000 aliens from flooding across the border and grabbing the library's art and knowledge. He doesn't have time to fool with us."
"What about the Roman sword?" asked Hollis, holding it up. "That goes back in Sam's museum collection." Hollis looked at Pitt. "You didn't find it in the trench?"
"No."
"You get a turn on digging holes?" Pitt acted as though he hadn't heard Hollis. He walked a short distance to the summit of the hill and looked down the slope into Mexico. The tent city had swelled to twice what it was the previous day. Tomorrow night, he thought. Topiltzin would unleash the storm tomorrow night. He turned to his left and stared up at the slightly higher Gongora Hill. The army engineers were digging exactly where Lily had placed her stakes 4 days ago. They made 2 separate excavations. One was at the common tunnel, complete with overhead supports. The other was an open mine, a gouged crater in the side of the hill. Work was going slowly since General Chandler had pulled away most of the engineers to help in the border defense. Pitt turned and came back down the incline. He walked up to Hollis. "Who's your best demolition expert?"
"Major Dillinger is one of the best explosive ordnance men in the Army. I need about 200 kilograms of C6 nitroglycerin gel."
Hollis looked at him in genuine surprise.
200 kilograms of C6? 10 kilos can take out a battleship. Do you know what you're asking? The nitrogel mix is shock hazardous."
"Also a battery of spotlights," Pitt pressed on. "We can borrow them from a rock concert group. Spotlights, strobe lights, and eardrum blasting audio equipment. Then he turned to Lily. I'll leave it to you to find a carpenter who can knock together a box.
Why in God's name do you want all that stuff? Lily asked, eyes wide with curiosity.
You don't want to know, Giordino moaned. I'll explain later, Pitt hedged.
Sounds crazy to me, said Lily, uncomprehending.
The lady was only half right, Pitt thought. His plan was twice as crazy as anything she could conceive, but he kept everyone in the dark. He didn't think now was the right time to tell them he planned to take his act on the stage.